Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
Before I give my talk, I'd like to welcome anybody who is new or relatively new, and I'd also like to welcome those of you who have been coming for 30 years. Everybody is welcome. Usually during the week, before I get on with my day, I go to Starbucks for tea in the morning, green tea. And I don't know his name yet, but there's a fellow there who is, he's new. So when I place my order, he's sort of fumbling around and he has to ask one of the other people that work there how to do the cash register. And he, you know, he's looking around, looking for stuff, and you can see that there are people in the line that are getting impatient, and that only makes him more anxious. And so it's been fascinating because over the course of a month or so, how he has changed and how he has basically gotten to know the system there, and he's much more comfortable. So I would like each of you who is just starting out to think of yourselves as a Starbucks employee. The other thing is, one of the things that, this brings me great joy, by the way, one of the things that we say in Zen, if you want to know the depth of a student's practice, look the way they place their shoes outside the door. Well, it's a thing of beauty. It makes a teacher very happy if you look at how the shoes are placed out there. Really, it's beautiful. And it's also a representation of being aware, only going straight ahead, only just putting your shoes there, not worrying about this afternoon or anything else. So today I want to talk a little bit about wabi-sabi and its relationship to Zen. Has anybody ever heard of wabi-sabi? Ah, cool. There's a book of koans or stories that's called The Transmission of the Lamp. And all of the stories are by women. And for those of you who are familiar with Zen, the women of Zen throughout time, going back to China and Japan, and even before that, there were women who practiced Zen, but they get no recognition or acknowledgement. And that hasn't begun until Zen came to this country. But even here, it's been slower than the men. So one of the things that we try to do here is acknowledge or recognize those women who have been, whose names have been left unsaid. So this first part here, this little story I'm going to tell you, comes from The Hidden Lamp, and it's a story about a nun called Chiono, C-H-I-Y-O-N-O. And so she was a Buddhist monk. And this story is referred to, if you go into the transmission of the lamp, the story is called No Water, No Moon. And so Chiono, her job in the monastery, and this is in the mountains of China, her job in the evening, or when it got dark, was to go out and get a pail of water to bring it back into the monastery so that the monks had a way to wash themselves. And so she did this every night. And this particular night, it was called what we call a full moon night. There was no ambient light. It was totally black. The only light came from the moon, this great big circle in the sky. And when she filled the bucket, there was the moon floating in the bucket. And one night, on a full moon night, she did the same thing that she did every night. But as these things happen in Zen, she looked at the moon and boom, she had an insight. So her sense of herself expanded to include everything. She was no longer just Chiono. She was everything. And so interconnected throughout the universe. And so this was her first insight into who she really was. Now, this pail that she used was old. And, you know, the wood was the way wood would be after carrying water for probably a couple of years. And it was held together by bamboo strips. But it was getting frail. And one night she took the bucket of water and there was her deepest friend, the moon, and as she was walking back, the pail came apart. The bamboo had given up holding the pail, and the water fell out of the bucket, as did the moon. And that's where the story comes from, that no water, no moon. And when this happened, when the water and the moon disappeared, again, she had another insight. And the insight was about impermanence, that nothing stays the same. The moon in the bucket will not last a lifetime. It served its purpose in a sense, right? It was there to awaken her. So now the moon has disappeared and the bucket has fallen apart. And so the teaching was, hold on to nothing. We'll bring suffering to ourselves if we hold on to anything. Even her old friend, the moon, who helped her awaken, she has to let that go. So one of the fundamental teachings of Zen is impermanence. So what is wabi-sabi? I'm going to read a little bit. Its fundamental essence is the Japanese art of finding beauty in imperfect, impermanent. It's finding beauty in the transient, in things that are imperfect and impermanent, and also in the profundity of nature, and accepting the natural cycle of growth, decay, and death. It celebrates the cracks, the crevices, and all the other marks of time, weather, and the loving use left behind. So it's very simple and appreciates the things that we usually pass by. And this was Chiono's experience. She accepted that things break, that they wear out over time, right? That everything is impermanent. But the process to its impermanence is stunningly beautiful. Even a crack, if we are open in this particular way, can be beautiful. A chip, rust. Wabi-sabi also reminds us that we beings on this planet, that our bodies as well as the material world are in the process of returning from which it came. Through the lens of wabi-sabi, we learn to embrace liver spots, rust, frayed edges, and the march of time. Now, how many of you, when you look in the mirror and you see gray hair, or you see liver spot on your forehead, or you look at your face, you have bags under your eyes, or your face just isn't the face that it was when you were young? Wabi-sabi, the lens of wabi-sabi, is to see the beauty in that lifetime change, right? We're taught in this culture, oh my God, if you have bags, you must run to, I don't know where you go, plastic surgeon or the beauty parlor down the street or whatever it is. If the car has a dent in it, it's not the same car anymore. And wabi-sabi is another way of looking at things and being open to change as really something lovely. Now, I'm going to read a few haiku, which I think, in a sense, capture the sense, excuse me, of wabi-sabi. This is by Adele Kenny, who is a New Jersey poet, and I think she's the president of the New Jersey Poetry Society. Fading yearbook, faces I almost remember. Fading yearbook, faces I almost remember. Late autumn, choosing a suit to be buried in. Late autumn, choosing a suit to be buried in. Two old men helping each other up the stairs. Now that image is so beautiful. It's a totally different way of seeing getting old. This loving care that these two old men have for each other and the respect they have toward each other, that they are aging together. And one more. The rusty old army truck brings back memories of those left behind. The rusty old army truck brings back memories of those left behind. Some of us, depending upon our past experience, don't just walk by a rusty old army truck. Some people are touched by that rusty old truck. And in this case, probably soldiers that had been in the war, remembering those fellow soldiers who didn't come home. So Zen teaches us to accept life as it is, and no matter how much we want it to be otherwise, right? That's where suffering comes in. If we can accept what's before us, if we can accept how life presents itself, no, we want it to be otherwise, That is the heart of suffering. We cling to something that we want, but that's not what's in front of us. So we're taught to pay attention moment by moment, without commentary and without sentimentality. And we say that in Zen, we pay attention to justice. The baby's crying, and we pick the baby up. It's simple as that. The baby cries, we pick the baby up to comfort him. There's no story in the beginning. There's just the act of tending to the baby. There's just this. And then later, you might tell the story to somebody. But in those moments that it's happening, there is no story. There's no sentiment. It's just this baby crying, just picking up that baby. Now, Dongshan was a Chinese Zen master. Well, he became a Chinese Zen master, but he was ready to leave his teacher, who was Yunyan. And Dongshan asked, later on, if somebody asks me, what is your teaching? How should I reply? And Yunyan paused for a moment. And then he said to his student, just this. What is your teaching? Just this. So just this means things as they are, nothing extra, no preferences. Another story. So a teacher and his student, again in the mountains, are walking on a trail. And this walk between with the teacher and the student together takes place not too long after the student had his first insight. And so the student is wide open, and he's walking with his teacher, and he's saying, oh, Roshi, can you hear the lovely, beautiful sound of the mountain stream? And his teacher doesn't say anything. So they continue walking, and the student says, Roshi, can you smell the pine trees? And the teacher says nothing. And they continue, and the student says, Roshi, I close my eyes. And I can feel the cool breeze blowing through the mountain trees. And the teacher says nothing. And they walk a little further. And again, just so alive, this fresh awakening. And he's just, everything is beautiful. And he says to the teacher, he said, Roshi, look, can you see those beautiful shadows cast by the mountain trees? And the Roshi says nothing. And so at this point, the student is getting confused. I mean, his teacher doesn't see all of this. So he says to his teacher, he said, Roshi, don't you see all of these beautiful things? And his teacher says to him, yes, I do, but there's no need to say so. The moment we say so, we lose the direct experience. As soon as we tell a story in our mind, as soon as we think something about the experience, then we have stepped away from the experience. So that's why there's no need to say so. Let's just walk up through the mountain woods. We can tell the story later about how beautiful this walk up, especially with my teacher, with whom I had my first insight. But just this, that's all that is necessary. Anything else in those moments is extra. Now, here's a very short haiku, which I think touches on this same thing. Daffodils, how beautiful, left unnamed. To really experience the essence of a daffodil, just this. We don't add a name, we don't call it daffodil, we just have that direct experience. And again, we can tell about the experience later, but in the moment of its occurring, there's no story, no idea, no preference, no comparison. There's just this. And this is the wabi-sabi state of mind. There was a paint can on the deck of my house, and it was, it was covered with paint because it had been used, and it was all this paint on it, and had been sitting out there for a while, so the top was starting to rust. And so here is this dented can, and I can't tell you how many times I walked past this can, this old, junky old can that I hadn't thrown out yet. And one day I walked past it, and there was just this, And this can reminded me that this was the paint that I used to paint my son's room. And that just this moment caused a realization of me, a realization of mine. It changed my relationship with this can, this old junky can. This is the same thing that happens with wabi-sabi. We see a broken dish. We can make up a story about it right away. But if it's just this broken dish, it is so beautiful. Even beautiful is extra. Now, there's a man named Leonard Koren, K-O-R-E-N, and he's a writer, and has this wonderful book, and it's called Wabi Sabi for Artists, Designers, Poets, and Philosophers. And he considers Wabi Sabi to be anti-aesthetic, and that it was the offspring of beat, punk, and grunge. Now, Leonard Koren is a very well-respected writer in the world of wabi-sabi. And this book is, if you're going to study wabi-sabi, this is one of the books that you have to read. And wabi-sabi reflected the spiritual and metaphysical simplicity and acceptance emphasized in Taoism and Chinese Zen Buddhism. Right, so he's making this connection between the Zen way of seeing the world and the wabi-sabi way of seeing the world. Speaking of wabi-sabi objects, Koren states, they are made of materials that are visibly vulnerable to the effects of weathering and human treatment. They record the sun, wind, rain, heat, and cold in a language of discoloration, rust, tarnish, stain, warping, shrinking, shriveling, and cracking. Their nicks, the chips and bruises, scars, dents, peeling, and other forms of attrition are a testament to the histories of use and misuse. Though things, wabi-sabi, may be on the point of dematerialization, extremely faint, fragile, or desiccated, they still possess an undiminished poise and strength of character. To be able to appreciate what he's talking about, though, you have to be able to experience a rusty can as just this, the story about it and how it fits in, and the beauty of it passing over time comes later. The initial experience is just like the Zen experience. You just see it, and then you realize that this broken old dish is not what we've been propagandized, or the way that we've been propagandized to see it, right? It's a piece of junk laying on the floor. We, you know, sweep it up and throw it out. But if we have the experience of just this, of just seeing it as it is, then we can appreciate that that broken dish is beautiful. There's a few lines by Leonard Cohen. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. And Koren goes on to say, the closer things get to non-existent, the more exquisite and evocative they become. To experience wabi-sabi means you have to slow down, be patient, and look very closely. Slow down, be patient, and look very closely. Don't discard it because it's rusty. Don't discard it because there are no flowers left. The complete term, wabi-sabi, describes a way of life practiced by those who notice and appreciate the significant moments of each day. That's not a Zen teaching, what is? Notice and appreciate the significant moments of each day. Live fully in each change of season and connect with nature and those around them. Right? Zen teaches us. There's another story which I won't tell because it's a bit long, but the student asks the teacher, can you express Zen in one word? And this goes on, and the teacher says, attention, and then he asks again, wasn't satisfied, and the teacher says again, attention, attention. Still, that doesn't satisfy the student. So he asks him again, can you say the essence of Zen in a few words? And for the third time, the teacher says, attention, attention, attention. So now the student is getting a little irritated, and he says, Roshi, what does attention mean? And his teacher says, attention means attention. So in Zen, we are taught from the very beginning to pay attention. And that's what Leonard Koren is saying. Pay attention. Don't disregard one thing and embrace another. Just pay attention. And that attention will transform the world around us. So if we just simply pay attention, if we don't immediately apply a story, if we don't immediately name the daffodil a daffodil and just experience it, this is no need to say so. If I love my son, which I do, there's no need to say so. Just love my son. And then later I can tell him how much I love him. But that initial experience is just love, just son. So, you know, if you're going to realize the truth of wabi-sabi, the teaching of wabi-sabi, we must maintain the spirit of just this. So in ending, I would say that Zen mind, wabi-sabi mind, are the same thing. Thank you.